Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone.
We interrupt this regularly scheduled programming for some breaking news.
April 24th, 2017, there is a banned list announcement for Commander, the game we all love. And there hasn't been any cards banned or unbanned in a bit, but there are two of them today. And it's pretty interesting. And one of them, I think a lot of people saw coming as well.
Yeah, I mean, should we? Well, let's kill the suspense. The card that was banned is Leovold, Emissary of Trest.
Yeah, and Leovold, if you guys remember, he came out in Conspiracy 2, and immediately, he's also extremely expensive now, but is definitely going to go down because he's no longer going to be able to play. He had an effect that said each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn, so you just basically lock everyone's hands out of the game by playing a Wheel of Fortune effect, and essentially making everyone draw a whole new hand and discard their old one, except they only get to draw one, and you get to draw as many as you want.
Yeah, it was basically a deck full of like wheel effects and Teferi's Puzzle Box, and it resulted in games where the Leovold player had cards in hand and nobody else did. And because Leovold's a 3-drop, you could do it fairly early in the game, which I think a lot of people found disheartening. What do you think about the banning, Jimmy?
Well, I'm with you in general on bannings, where I'm like, it's fine, don't ban it if it doesn't, like, I would rather not ban things, but there was so much toxicity around Leovold, and the one time I did play a Leovold deck, I did walk away from it going like, I really don't want to do that ever again. So I'm okay with it for the most part. The card was originally designed, keep in mind, for tiny leaders, and that was sort of like the intention they had for it, and it ended up being one of the more powerful decks you could run in EDH, so I'm okay with it. What about you, Josh?
I wouldn't ban it. I did play against it a couple times. I actually never got killed by it, but I was always very proactive as soon as I saw the card to be like, we have to kill that player first. And that's what I would just convince everybody to do that. And so that's what we would do. And the Leovold player would put that deck away for the next game. So I never really saw it do its thing, firsthand. I understand what it can do, and I understand why that wouldn't be fun. So for me, I sort of am still on the don't ban stuff train just because I want to keep that list low. And, you know, anybody who's playing a Leovold deck can just move on to the Xur deck or whatever the heck else is the next tier one deck that they want to. And Leovold wasn't even as good as most of the top tier decks. I think it was tier 1.5 or maybe even tier 1, but it wasn't like the best deck. So
yeah,
to me, sure, ban it, don't ban it. I mean, I feel bad for people who had built a Leovold deck because it wasn't a cheap commander. And
maybe this is karmic justice for them, Josh, that they are delivering other people from having fun. So in result, now they must have the price of just a deck that they can't play anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that seems kind of overkill. And who knows? There's plenty of playgroups like ours, I think, where, you know, I don't think that that person who's playing the Leovold deck is mean.
No.
You know?
No,
I'm going to do my best to kill that person first, but I don't want them to lose $700 or whatever. So, I guess I would say I'm against the banning, but on a scale of 1 to 10, it's not like I'm a 10 against it. I'm a 6 against it.
Yeah, I think the card had the potential from the beginning, and as a result I was never interested in building the deck, one because I'm not really interested in the effect, but also like if something's on the edge of like oppressive and you know that it may get you the result of someone's just going to try and kill you every single time, that kind of deck is not what I'm interested in building anyway. So Leovold's gone. Bye, Leovold. It was nice knowing you.
Leovold, we hardly knew you.
Yeah, replace him with any other number of very powerful Sultai commanders if you have him in the deck. Play Damia, Sage of Stone. There, done.
There, I think you might have to change your deck quite a bit if you do this.
Nah.
I don't think it's close to the same deck.
Damia's about drawing cards, right? Perfect. Yeah.
I feel bad for everybody out there who had a Leovold deck. It sucks to have your deck just totally banned out from under you. You know, I feel for you, but I know there's a lot of people out there who are like, yay, I won't have to play against that deck. So,
yeah.
You know.
And the people like me where it's like, I played against it once, and I guess that's all I'll ever know.
So the card, there was one card that was unbanned. So this I'm much more happy about. Even though this is not necessarily the card I would have chosen first to unban, I think I've talked enough on the show about wanting to sort of get that ban list down if possible and take some things off of it. But I think this one's okay to unban. I'll be interested to hear your perspective, Jimmy. It's Protean Hulk.
Yeah.
I'll read the card because it's kind of important now because you're allowed to play it where you weren't before. So it's 5 green for a 6/6 creature beast. It says, when Protean Hulk is put into a graveyard from play, Search your library for any number of creature cards with total converted mana cost 6 or less, and put them into play, and then shuffle your library. So Protean Hulk tutors out 6 mana worth of creatures.
Any number. So you can do can be 6 spread. 1 drops if you wanted.
Yeah, exactly. You can put any number of 0 drops out also when Protean Hulk comes out if you feel like it. If you got Kobolds of Kirkkeep and all that, go yeah. for Ornithopter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is a card with a lot of combo potential, obviously. It is a card... There's some well-known combos with it. I think the big one is a card called Flash. So Flash is a blue card that... I should read it here because I was going to fall into the trap of trying to explain it without reading the card.
Yeah, sometimes we make mistakes when that happens. I'll just read it. Flash, 1 in the blue for an instant with some of the wonkiest art I've ever seen. Looks like it was done in MS Paint. You may put a... sorry, David, the artist. You may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. If you do, sacrifice it unless you pay its mana cost reduced up to 2 generic mana. So the idea is like, oh, you can flash something in and pay a little bit less for it, or you can just play it in and it gets sacrificed. So in this case, Protean Hulk comes in immediately for 2 mana, so this is a turn 2 play potentially, and then it just gets whomped out of here, and you immediately can combo off with him.
Yeah, because you actually want the Protean Hulk to die, so the sacrifice part of Flash is actually in your favor. So you 2 mana, flash out Protean Hulk. Because of Flash, you immediately sacrifice it. And then you go find Karmic Guide and Viscera Seer. Karmic Guide brings the Protean Hulk back onto the battlefield. You sack it to Viscera Seer. You sack the Karmic Guide. You go get Revelark with the trigger off of Protean Hulk. The Revelark brings back the Karmic Guide, brings back the Protean Hulk. You continue this process. You go get any number of cards from that point because you can do things like, well, we saw on Game Nights, I think it was episode 3, Alex Kessler with the murderous red cap. You can basically do that. So you can turn to, you know, in theory,
win the game.
that kind of effect is very powerful. And, you know, if you get the right cards in hand. Now, none of those things are a commander. So, and you need Protean Hulk and Flash in your hand on turn 2 to do it.
And
so,
white and black. So it's like 4 colors as well.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's impossible, and decks with a lot of tutors can pull things off like that, obviously. It's probably more likely to happen on turn 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And in competitive metas, you know, there's a lot of combo decks that are going off around that time. This might be, you know, on a little bit on the early side, but again, it doesn't involve a commander, so it's not a card that you always have.
Yeah. I mean, it's very powerful in that it automatically tutors out 2 creatures, 3 creatures, as many as you need, essentially, and then puts them onto the battlefield. So it's not even into your hand. So the only quote-unquote downside is that you have to find a way for it to be put into a graveyard, and Flash is one of those ways. Any number of sack outlets is a way to do this. Even cards like Sneak Attack are ways to do this because it sacrifices at the end of the turn. So obviously there's a huge amount of combo potential here. I think the thing that I mostly disagree with is what the rules committee had to say about it. So they said support within the community has been tilting towards Protean Hulk for some time, blah 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 blah, and he says, we acknowledge the card will be strong but are of the opinion that it won't be the centralizing factor it once would have been. Back when Protean Hulk was banned, both creatures and graveyard control were nowhere as strong as they are today. And then the thing that I really disagree with, we suspect Protean Hulk will be much like Kakusho the Evening Star when it was unbanned, powerful but not broken in the current commander landscape. And that is so off to me because Kakusho is whatever compared to what Protean Hulk can do. Protean Hulk's ability is like arguably 20 times better than what Kakusho's is. And
oh, for sure. It's not even close. And you'll see a common theme about all the broken stuff we always talk about on the show almost always has, you know, tutoring / cheating of mana costs. And this does both.
Yeah.
Which Kakusho does neither of those things. And,
yeah.
and I would generally say that if a card isn't either, you know, tutoring for combo pieces and cheating things into play, and or it's probably doesn't need to be banned because it just doesn't have quite the ability to win on the spot with no help as those cards do. It just doesn't fundamentally break the game of Magic like Protean Hulk does.
Yeah, so in general, I'm fine with this being unbanned because I'd like to use it in a couple of decks myself, not because I'm trying to go infinite, but just because it's an incredible value creature for what it does. I heavily disagree with the idea that it's not going to be broken compared to something like Kakusho. I think this is going to impact a lot of games in a significant way, in that if you're running green and have creatures, you're going to play a Protean Hulk. It's very like rare that you would find a reason not to play this creature in most green decks, I think, that have creatures that want to do stuff.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I've said this many times on the show, which is that I think there are so many cards that fall into the category of, like, you play that, and if you want to, you can win, you know? My go-to is Tooth and Nail, but there's a whole bunch of cards that, you know, if you feel like it and you build your deck in a certain way, there's a bunch of cards where it's like, if I cast that and it resolves, then I'm going to win if I want to, you know? Because, like, there's just too many broken cards in Magic, and we can't ban them all. So I'm fine with Protean Hulk because, you know, 85, 90% of people will just play it. And then when it dies, they'll go get, you know, a six drop that's pretty good, and they'll put it into play, and, you know, they'll go get Dromoka or something, and you'll be like, okay, that card's good. But it won't be like, oh, man, here we go, turn two, you comboed off and killed everybody. Like, that's not how most people are going to play it. And the people that are going to play it that way, they were going to find the cards that were going to do that anyway. So maybe this makes it 1% easier for them, you know, of all the combos and all possibilities and all the decks and all the world. Like, now they have one more.
There's a bit of an unbalance between those decks, too, because a lot of the ways they find it otherwise to get creatures is, like, spells and creature tutors. Whereas Protean Hulk needs a way to have it die. And so that, you know, that's another card in the deck as well. So unless the deck's built to really use Protean Hulk, I think it may be even a little clunky for the most refined combo decks, if that makes sense.
Right, yep. There's one other thing we wanted to mention. It's not a banning that's specific to Commander, but it does affect Commander players, is that it's a little bit complicated because the Rules Committee is actually separate from Wizards of the Coast, but the Rules Committee did announce these official bannings. The Rules Committee for Commander did announce these official bannings today, but Wizards also announced some official bannings for the formats that they oversee today as well. So they oversee, obviously, Standard, Modern, Legacy, Vintage. And the one that we want to talk about is in Legacy. In Legacy, they banned Sensei's Divining Top. So because the Miracles deck in Legacy was very, very good, and I don't know if I can say it was oppressive. I don't know enough about Legacy, but it was very good.
It was the best deck in the format.
I think one of the reasons they stated, too, was that it made tournaments really unwieldy because top leads to a lot of games going to time and games ending in a draw. And so that was another thing I think they stated as a reason to ban it. But anyway, the upside of that banning is that there's a lot less demand for it, and therefore the price on it is already dropping. And it's kind of a card that it's close to like Sol Ring as far as there are very, very few decks that would not be better with a Sensei's Divining Top if they don't already have one in there, in Commander, I mean.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's Sol Ring is definitely like the number one must-have card in every deck, and then top is very close behind. You know, maybe other mana rocks or color-specific cards are there, but the price going down is very nice, and I think it's going to be, you know, I encourage everyone to be able to use this as quickly as possible because we always hear complaints about people taking forever to use the top. I don't understand how it takes that long, but just, you know, top, just say, like, at your end step, you just pass the turn, you man up for top, just say, at your end step, I'm going to top. So you can figure all that out way before it comes back to your turn.
Yeah, in fact, we even did an entire episode on how to play faster, and for those people who haven't already been playing with Sensei's Divining Top, but now that the price has dropped and you're going to pick some up and play with them, I would very much encourage you to listen to that episode. It's episode 110, again, of the podcast. And hopefully you can learn some little tips and tricks in there of how to keep your play fast enough, because definitely there are a lot of decision points possible with the top, and it can be really frustrating for the group if one player is sort of not well-versed in how to use their top in an efficient manner.
Yep. All right, well, that about does it for our little break in the show. Let's get back to the actual episode, though. We have an exciting one. It is the set review for Amon Khet, and we just got back from our pre-releases. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. You?
I did as well. It's a grindy format, but it's going to be a fun one, I think, for Commander. So how about we hop right into it?
All right, everybody. We'll see you on the other side.
3, 2, 1. Guess that song. Dun, dun, da, da.
Dun, 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 da, da. Come on down
to the Command Zone podcast.
That's Price is Right, everybody, for those who didn't guess it.
I'm your Bob Barker. You can be Drew Carey.
Wait, what?
Wait, hold on. No. You're like ancient, according to the prof. So,
I'm Bob Barker?
You're Bob Barker. I'm Drew Carey.
Hey, you can beat up Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, it's true.
So he's good.
The price is wrong. How's it going, everybody? You are listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How is it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today, we have a fun one. It is a set review. It is
Amonkhet's.
The Amonkhet set review.
Did you see the trailer for Amonkhet, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
It was really cool. I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, they did a great job. They always do a good job with those trailers, and I'm a trailer guy, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I got to play the set a little at the pre-release, so that was fun.
That's right. And you went 1-1. You lost to Aaron Forsythe's ridiculous deck.
That Sphinx, man. I don't know how to beat that thing.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's not on the set review because it's just not that good.
No, it's not that good in Commander, but it's great and limited.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should move along with the episode. Oh, God. The problem is we've been recording like all kinds of stuff for game nights and for, you know, all this content we've got coming out.
There's
so
a lot of stuff coming
out. My brain's just mush. Anyway, cardkingdom.com sponsors this podcast.
That's right.
And game nights also. Mm-hmm. So you should go to cardkingdom.com/command zone and use that affiliate link. Or you can go to cardkingdom.com/game nights and use that affiliate link. Either one is good for us. They sponsor the show. They keep the lights on. They're really great. In fact, I had a lot of people asking about my shirt from the last Game Nights episode. The
white
one,
and blue and black and red and green.
And that is from Card Kingdom.
Yeah.
So that's something you can get there. You can also, you know, order your Amonkhet singles and sealed product, which is probably a good idea because the set looks awesome.
It looks really, really good. And hey, if you're confused about which affiliate link to use, just know that whatever one you're using supports that specific show. So Command Zone supports the podcast and cardkingdom.com/game nights supports the show Game Nights. So your choice, really.
Dealer's choice. Whoa, hey, jinx.
Jinx.
Another way to support the show is directly through patreon.com/command zone. We've got a lot of new patrons lately. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate all you guys and the support you're showing us. It's a big help to keeping all of our various content going. And one thing we do is shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to
Kelsey Ito. Thank you, Kelsey. A recent joiner because I believe Kelsey would like to procure our very first playmat from Patreon, which is very exciting for her. We're going to announce this a bunch. We're also running a Kickstarter for that playmat. Should we tell them about now or later?
I think we should show it to them now. So this is the playmat.
Wow. If you're watching this on video, you'll be able to see it.
If you're listening to it in the car, you can't see it.
Imagine just the coolest piece of art you've ever seen.
It's a war-torn landscape after an epic game of Commander. It was commissioned from artist Jesse Aronson. Did an amazing job. We're really proud of how it turned out.
Yep.
Now, if you're a patron, you're going to get a special version of the playmat that's different than the one that I just showed you.
If you cross the $80 mark on lifetime.
Patrons that qualify. Yep. And so you're going to get a playmat that doesn't have the Ultra Pro logo, and it's going to be signed and numbered by Jimmy and I. But everybody else who's not a patron will still be able to get their hands on this playmat. We're running a Kickstarter right now where you can order it. That link is going to be in the show description. And
on our Twitter, in the YouTube comments. It's going to be everywhere.
And you should go and order one if you want one, because We're only gonna sell this thing for this one limited time. So you're gonna have like a 1 month period, and you have to order by the end of that. And once the Kickstarter's done, we're never selling it again.
Yep. So that's it. It's a limited edition. So you're gonna want to pick it up now. Again, all the links are always in the show notes, in the description box, and all of that. All right, we have a big show ahead of us. So let's just get right to it. It is the Amonkhet set review. We're off to Amonkhet. It's a ton of interesting new mechanics and cards in this Egyptian-inspired plane. We're also going to do a new thing where we wrap it up at the end and crown some of our early picks for the best of in certain categories. So, for instance, the episode that we reviewed, Panharmonicon, I think we both would have been best card in the set.
Yes.
Panharmonicon.
Bing!
Same idea. So we're going to do that for this set, and we'll see how good our predictions are in the long run.
But let's start with the new mechanics. So there are, three new mechanics, and one returning mechanic. Mm-hmm. So one of the new mechanics is Embalm. Embalm is basically like flashback, but for creatures.
Yeah.
So cards with Embalm, they let you use the card again when it's in the graveyard. It will have an Embalm and then a cost. And then what you do is you create a token that's a copy of that card and put it onto the battlefield, except for that it's a white zombie in addition to its other types. And then you exile the original card from your graveyard. So it's very similar to flashback.
Yep, and you can only embalm as a sorcery. And limited, obviously, is very powerful. You get a second use out of your cards. But as we saw in Game Night's Episode 6, Mel used it to great effect with her Temet deck because she was able to essentially cast her commander, sans commander attacks, and get the same effects of it, and then send it to the command zone after it was exiled from the graveyard. So very cool, very fun effect, and it's going to have a little bit of play in the cards that we review today. The second new mechanic is called Exert, and this is the kind of red effect that I'm in love with. Permanents become exerted when you either attack with them or do something, and it gives them a little extra ability boost. So you may exert a creature as it attacks if it has the ability, and then it's not going to untap during your next untap step. Like, it needs to take another turn to, like, get a breather, if that
it's
makes
like
sense.
It's like, instead of just regular attacking, it really tried hard on that attack, so it has to rest an extra turn. Yeah. It's interesting because it's sort of a... It gives you an effect, right? You exert something, and then it sort of does something extra. And if that is worth it, then you can totally use it in Commander. And also, we have a lot of ways to do interesting things like untap our creatures
cards.
On purpose. So I think, there's a little bit of play with that mechanic.
Yeah, not to mention, like our good friend Wesley Rello pointed out, Vigilance, very good with Exert, if you can give a creature Vigilance.
Because then it doesn't tap to begin with. It doesn't say when it taps, it just says when it attacks. Yeah. So, and then there's the Aftermath or Split cards. These you've seen, right? It looks like two cards on one card, but one's sort of upright and the other sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And what these mean is that one end of the card can be cast
again.
Again. So, well, not
well,
again.
It's a new, it's the same card, but with a new effect.
Okay, so how do you explain that? Okay, so the card, one effect can be cast from your hand.
Like
and
normal.
And the other one can be cast from your graveyard. Correct. It's kind of like split cards, except for that when you cast it the first time, you don't choose between the two. You can only cast one end of it. And then the other end can only be cast from your graveyard. So,
And also, this is all the cards are very different. We'll talk about them. But the type of the card isn't necessarily the same on the top and the bottom half. So one might be an instant. The other might be a sorcery. Or they might both be sorceries.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And they're different colors oftentimes, so they can only fit into certain decks. So a lot like the split cards or the fuse cards.
Yeah, the cards look very funky. But Aftermath is the only part where you can cast it from your graveyard. And then you exile the card after that, so you can't just keep doing it. Notably, this also came with a rules change that these split cards overall now do not have the CMC of just one half of the card. If you're trying to cast just one part of it, the CMC is now equal to the total combined mana cost of the full card. So before, people were using some cool combos in Modern to use the Expertise Cycle to cast some split cards for way cheaper because they were using part of the CMC to sort of cheat it out.
Yeah, so you can't do that as much anymore. Although I believe that the card CMC, when you cast it and it's actually on the stack, is equal to the amount that you paid and no longer the combined total. It's a little confusing. You're going to have to read up on those rules exactly.
Yeah, they just try to sort of tighten the borders of that.
And the last mechanic, this is the returning one, is called Cycling. Cycling is another cost that's on the card, and then it says like Cycling 2, and it'll be two colorless mana. And that just means that instead of paying the regular cost of the card and then casting it as normal, you can pay the cycling cost and then you discard that card and draw another card. And you can do that at instant speed. And occasionally cycling cards have other effects that say, well, when you cycle this card, do something else, which means you discard it, draw a card, and do that added effect.
Or like things like my Neheb deck, discard matters. So you are discarding the card when you cycle it. But it's a very useful mechanic for a lot of cards because obviously you get a second use out of it in case you don't need to play that land or do whatever with that card. You're like, I need to just find another card. I'm going to cycle this.
All right, let's get into the cards here. We're going to start with what was probably the most anticipated part about Amonkhet. It was among the first art that was released was the art for the new gods.
Yeah, so you guys remember Theros had their own selection of gods throughout the set. These were legendary enchantment creatures, and Amonkhet continues that tradition. However, these are just legendary creatures, but they all share a few things in common.
Yeah, let's talk about that really quickly. So in Theros, they were enchantment creatures, and they didn't actually become creatures until you met a certain requirement, and it was usually devotion. These gods from Amonkhet are always creatures. It's just they can't attack and block sometimes. So there's no point in time at which, you know, we're going to talk first about Oketra, which is the white one. There's no point in time when Oketra is not a creature, which I think makes them quite a bit worse than the Theros gods.
Certainly. It opens them to a lot more types of removal. Before, you could play a Purphoros on the board, and because it was still an enchantment, and you were, let's say, you're just making a ton of tokens, someone couldn't path to exile your commander because it was an enchantment, not a creature yet. So because these guys and gals are creatures, they are more vulnerable to actual forms of removal, like a Toxic Deluge or a Path to Exile. However, they are all indestructible, so they're still pretty powerful.
All right, let's read Oketra. Oketra, I did actually get in my pre-release pool.
And
she
did work.
She was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's very good in Limited. I think less good in Commander. But 3 and a white for a legendary creature god. This is the cat god, and inexplicably, there's not the word cat on the card, which is a little...
Well, actually, we realize this, that the legendary enchantment creatures from Theros also didn't say, like, Minotaur from Mogus. They're just legendary enchantment creatures.
Right, so these don't say enchantment, so you could have put the tribe there instead. All right, I already bitched about it, so... it's a three and a white for a legendary creature god. It's a 3/6, double strike and indestructible.
Sick.
So those are two good abilities. And then Oketra the True can't attack or block unless you control at least three other creatures. And then you can pay three and a white to create a 1/1 white warrior creature token with vigilance. Doesn't tap Oketra or anything, so if you have 8 mana, you can create 2 tokens, 12 mana, 3, blah, blah, blah. So Oketra can get you to the point where she turns into a creature.
Yeah, and this seems very powerful for limited. However, 3 and a white to create a 1/1 white warrior creature token with vigilance isn't the best rate you can get in Commander. This reminds me a little bit of cards like Breemaz, where you know they seem very powerful on the outset, but
in a
Commander game, it doesn't do enough. Yeah.
Think of like Heliod, which is the Theros version, which creates 2/1 clerics, but also gives all your creatures vigilance, and then has that thing we talked about earlier where he's not always a god.
Yeah.
So
and it's the same CMC to pump out a creature, too.
Yeah, it's just like this. Heliod doesn't see a ton of play. It's just fringe playable in Commander, and yeah. I'd say Oketra is definitely worse than Heliod.
Yeah, I could see her having some limited use, but as an overall, like sort of one of the flagship gods, definitely not the most powerful of the bunch.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on to the blue god next. You can go ahead and read it.
Kefnet, the Mindful. This is the bird god. 2 in the blue for a 5/5 flying indestructible. So the rate is good.
3 mana, 5/5 flying indestructible.
However, Kefnet, the Mindful can't attack or block unless you have 7 or more cards in hand. However, she does have this ability, or it might be, I think it's a he? I don't know. Who knows? They're gods. 3 in the blue, so it's the same CMC as Oketra.
The same activation cost,
cost to draw a card, and then you may return a land you control to its owner's hand. So this kind of counts as 2 cards in your hand to get you towards that 7 or more cards in hand.
Right, if you're at 5, you can activate the ability, return a land to your hand, and draw the card, and now you're at 7, yeah. And now Kefnet can attack.
But this is interesting because there are a lot of utility lands that are very useful in Magic the Gathering that you'd love to play more than once. So Kefnet the Mindful does have this ability to bounce cards to your hand. So that could be very useful. It could also just be a little bit of a hindrance.
If you had Landfall or something.
Yeah, for sure.
It could be useful, although you'd probably have to be pairing it with like green and stuff to really take advantage.
If you have something like an Ancient Tomb and you haven't played your land for the turn, you could bounce it using that mana, play it again, and sort of get a refund on what you're doing there, too. So there's a bit of utility there. I think this is definitely one of the more gods you can build around.
Yeah, I think in the deck where Kefnet is useful, it's very good, because in the deck that actually wants to bounce lands, and then you also get to draw a card, it could be very good.
Yeah, not many cards let you bounce lands to your hand.
Yeah, so I think this one is again, it's not going to definitely not in every deck, but it's, I think, better than the white one for Commander.
Yeah. So far, we're just leveling up how good they are. Maybe this one's going to be even better. Who knows?
Yeah, this is Bantu, the Glorified. This is the black god.
The jackal pup.
2 and a black for a legendary creature god, a 4/6. So 3 mana, 4/6 with menace and indestructible. Bantu can't attack or block unless a creature died under your control this turn. And then you can pay 1 and a black, sacrifice another creature, scry 1, and then each opponent loses 1 life. And you gain 1 life.
Now we're talking.
This, I think, is the best one. I don't want to ruin our little discussion later, but this... We've often talked about on the show how just a card that allowed you to sacrifice stuff for no other effect would be fringe playable, because you often just want to be able to... Somebody goes to steal something.
Well, that's why High Market's so good.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
You gain a life, it doesn't matter. You can just sac a creature and into speed, stop it from being stolen.
Yep. The fact that you can now sac creatures for an effect to scry and also to, you know, drain everybody.
Each opponent, yeah.
Yeah, you only gain 1 no matter how many opponents there are, but they all lose 1. There's definitely scenarios in Commander where you can kill everyone with that ability. You know, enough mana and enough creatures and you win.
Yeah, so Bantu, I think, definitely has the highest upside so far, in that you could play it in any, pretty much any black deck and be okay with it. Honestly, a 3-mana, 4/6 menace indestructible that can occasionally attack and block is pretty good.
Yep, that has that sacrifice ability on it.
Yeah, and the scrying, I think, is also really important. Scry is now an evergreen ability, so it's available in every color, and black, I think, is very welcome to have that in its sort of wheelhouse. Red would like it more, but... Black will take it as well.
Yeah, I could definitely see Bantu getting play in like some Marin decks and things like that, where you really want to be sacking creatures. And it's also a creature that Marin can bring back.
Yeah.
This next one's interesting. It's Hazoret the Fervent.
It's my god. It should be my god.
Yeah, you should read it, actually.
Yeah, it's 3 and a red for a 5/4 indestructible haste. However, Hazard the Fervent can't attack or block unless you have one or fewer cards in hand, and then the activated ability, two in a red, discard a card. Hazoret deals 2 damage to each opponent. Now, this would have been great in my Neheb deck.
Yeah, I think it totally goes in that deck. If you have a discard-style deck, it's good because it's like we said for your Neheb deck. It kind of, you don't want to read the text if you have one or fewer cards in hand, right?
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, I don't want to have one or fewer cards in hand. But then if you go, well, then if everybody has one or fewer cards in hand, then it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, this card is kind of a beating if it can just come down and start swinging at people. The discarding a card effect costs a lot, 3 mana to do it, and it's only 2 damage to each opponent.
It is to each opponent.
I mean, you could just run an Earthquake-esque effect, you know, and be able to kill
more
things.
This allows
you
to discard cards, though. You might want stuff in your bin. I mean,
yeah.
I think you could build around this and it'd be okay. I think the thing that hurts it is the haste. Like, I wish I had a slightly better, you know.
Hazard the Fervent, indestructible, draw 5 cards when Hazard enters the battlefield.
I wish it said that.
Yeah, there we go. I'll put a little combustible gear hulk on it.
Yeah, I'm not super high on Hazoret. I think it's just okay.
Yeah, this last one, it's the green god. It is Ronas the Indomitable. One of my favorite words is indomitable. I love that word.
It's hard to say. Is it abominable indomitable? Ronas the Indomitable, 2 and a green for a god. 5/5 death touch indestructible.
Hey.
3 mana, 5/5 death touch indestructible.
That's pretty good.
Yep. It's a little trigger, the text that allows it to turn on an attack and block is, unless you control another creature with power 4 or greater. Another creature. So if you control even one creature that's power 4 or greater, then Ronas is just on.
Yeah.
So that's actually really easy to accomplish.
But the activated ability makes this very interesting.
Yeah, so the activated ability is 2 and a green, and another target creature gets +2/+0, and gains trample until end of turn. So as long as you have a 2/2 on the battlefield and 3 mana, you can always turn Ronas on.
Yeah, I actually like Ronas a lot. I don't think it's as good as the black or even the blue god potentially, but it might rank up above the blue one. It just depends.
Yeah, I think the green one, I think Ronas is sort of more applicable in more decks than the blue one, but when the blue one's at its best, I think it's better than this.
Yeah.
But Ronas is just going to be more useful more often as far as like, because it's a death touch creature, so at the very least, it just stops all the ground crap from coming at you.
And it's so easy to turn on Ronas's ability with just one other creature on the battlefield. I don't think you're playing too many one-powered creatures in a green deck, too.
Yeah, and often you'll just have a natural 4-power creature and you don't have to turn it on. And the fact that it gives trample is totally relevant because very often you just want to smash damage through, and being able to give trample to anything is a powerful ability. It's just not an ability you want to spend an entire card on. But if that card's also like a 5/5 and death touch indestructible that pumps other stuff. I mean, I think Xenagos probably wants this card.
Yeah, Xenagos definitely does. And here's the thing about all of these gods that we should be mentioning is that because they're indestructible, they're going to stick around for a lot longer in general. Very few board wipes get rid of them. Toxic Deluges do. And
Cyclonic Rifts
and the Green Sun Zeniths.
And
but,
the Hallowed Burials and stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but for the most part, you know, your Wrath of Gods, your regular Kill All Things are not going to get rid of these. And, you know, having a 5/5 death touch indestructible on the battlefield after a board wipe feels pretty good because you just need to play one creature to really get it going again.
Also, just think if you're sitting there with Ronas out and any other creature and just you have 3 mana available. Well, no one's going to attack into you with anything that they don't want to lose because you don't even have to, you know, it just deters aggression without you even doing it because you can just, it's threat of activation, right? It's just the ability to turn on Ronas, block with Death Touch, take something out and not lose it, just kind of will make most people go, I'll just attack somebody else.
Yeah, very, you know, in the tier list of things I want to pair with Death Touch, First Strike is on that list, but Indestructible is even higher on that list. It's pretty good.
All right, so those are the gods. Now we have the legendary creatures, and you got a good look at all of these in Game Nights Episode 6 with Cassius Marsh and Mel Lee. We all got to build decks around these new legendary creatures. So
this first one you built around.
Yeah, we've talked about two of them already. Hapatra was my deck. This is Hapatra, Vizier of Poisons, a black and a green for a 2/2 legendary creature, Human Cleric. Has two lines of text. Whenever Hapatra deals combat damage to a player, you may put a -1/-1 counter on target creature. And whenever you put one or more -1 counters on a creature, create a 1/1 green snake creature token with death touch. So anytime you put a -1 counter on any creature, you make a death touchy snake. Now, if you put 3 -1 counters on a creature at the same time, you still only would get one snake, though.
But if you put 3 -1 counters on 3 different creatures, you get 3 snakes.
The snakes are very good. They're better than I thought they would be.
They're like mini Ronuses, man. Like, I could never attack into you that entire game. No one really could, honestly.
Yeah.
And building a deck around Hippatra seems much more viable than just having her in the deck, if that makes sense.
It's, yeah, she's very good. She's a lot stronger than I thought. The fact that she's a two drop and you can usually play her on two, swing on three, and get that going already with snakes. And then at that point, the value is just so high. I think she's pretty strong.
I agree. I think building a deck around her is a lot of fun. If you have an infect heavy deck, then that's another way to potentially
just
use her.
Yeah, because infect creatures deal damage in the form of negative one counters. So all of a sudden, if you block, even if your creature dies, it's going to put negative one counter on what it blocked, and then you're going to make snakes. Yeah.
Yeah, same with Wither is a similar effect there. All right, the next multicolored legendary creature is Neheb the Worthy.
This
we
one's
did a
yours.
Full deck tech on this, so we won't go too deep into it, but it's one black and a red for a 2/2 legendary creature Minotaur Warrior. Here comes the text. Neheb has first strike. Neheb also, other Minotaurs you control have first strike. Neheb also says, as long as you have one or fewer cards in hand, Minotaurs you control get +2/+0. And first strike, by the way. And finally, whenever Neheb the Worthy deals combat damage to a player, each player discards a card. So that's a lot of text.
So all your Minotaurs have first strike. If you have one or fewer cards, they're all bigger.
Mm-hmm.
2/+0. And because they have first strike, that's why it doesn't pump power, right? Or toughness, right? Because if you make a 4/2 first strike, it's kind of basically a 4/4.
Yeah.
And then whenever it deals damage, everybody discards a card. We talked about this. You built around that last clause.
Mm-hmm.
You could obviously build around the Minotaur part. That's possible too.
Yeah, you're not going to get as much support, but it's definitely a viable
thing to
do.
People love tribal, though, so I get it. You know, if you want to build a tribal deck, I get it.
I like tribal, too.
Yeah, I
But anyway, if you want a full deck tech on how use Neheb the Worthy, just go check out the episode. I believe it's two back from this one.
Sorry, guys. I don't like tribal that much.
It's just, I mean, we like winning, so
tribal. We should talk about, holy crap, we skipped right over, like, the big news this week.
Oh, that's right.
We'll talk about it right now, because why not?
Yeah, because we're talking about
podcast.
How much we love tribal,
yeah,
right?
It's our podcast. We'll do what we want. they announced that Commander 2017, which is this year, they're going to only release 4 decks. They usually release 5. And the decks are going to be tribal decks this year.
Tribal, very cool. And Gavin Verhey, who worked on that, I believe he was the head designer or the lead. I forget what the exact nomenclature is, but he said that one of the tribes you won't expect. So people have been tweeting at us what they think it is. I have no idea. There's some silly things in there, yeah.
We're probably getting like elves, goblins, merfolk, and...
Who knows?
Werewolf?
But hey,
they could give us our werewolf.
Oh, that's right. They could.
I don't think they will, because you have to print so many double face cards to make the printing process.
If you have a guess, though, please let us know in the comments. Tweet at us, and also tweet at Gavin Verhey. I believe he's just at Gavin Verhey on Twitter. But
this is really good news for all the people over the years that have really, really asked us to talk about tribal things on the show and play tribal decks on game nights, because we've shied away because I don't like tribal. But
yeah,
I guarantee we're gonna do. We're going to have to talk about it because, you know, the tribal decks will come out. And
yeah. I can't wait.
I hope they're awesome.
I hope they're awesome, too. Gavin led the design on it, so that is very exciting. So, can't wait.
Gavin's a good guy. I'm sure it's sweet. I'm sure it's cool.
Yeah.
All right, back to the legendary creatures. Next one was the deck that Cassius Marsh, the Seattle Seahawks defensive end, built around. It's Samut, Voice of Dissent. It's 3...
This card is a beating.
Yeah, this card's a beating. It's 3 red green, so 5 mana total for a legendary creature, Human Warrior. She is a 3/4. She has flash. She also has double strike, vigilance, and haste. She also says all other creatures you control have haste.
Good lord.
And then, because that wasn't enough stuff, you can also pay white and tap Samut and then untap another target creature.
What?
So, first of all, you're in Naya. So it's 3 color commander,
right?
Which is different than all the other legendary creatures in this set.
Mm-hmm.
And the abilities are just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is a commander where you can just go in so many different directions, because you can use the haste that she gives. You could, because she's got flash and haste and double strike, you can go Voltron-y with her.
Yeah.
And you can also use the untap another target creature ability and really abuse that. So this is a fun one. I think that there's going to be a lot of cool brews, and probably my guess is there's not going to be a ton of, you know, when you see a Samut deck, you're not going to know exactly what you're getting every time.
Yeah. I also wouldn't be surprised if Samut turned into a Planeswalker She definitely has I don't know. Who knows? I mean, this is like the lead character here. Like we have a legendary Minotaur, but then you just got Samut, who just
she basically has as many abilities as a Planeswalker now. So yeah,
seriously, the ability to untap another target creature, very interesting.
If you didn't watch Game Nights episode 6, you should see what Cassius did with it. He basically just played huge monsters.
Yeah,
that threatened
and
to have haste.
Every time he played it on his turn, I was like, it has flash. I was like, oh wait, but it gives everything haste. So
And every time he swung with it, you were like, oh crap, that has a lot of damage.
Yeah, seriously. All right. Our last legendary creature is Temet Vizier of Naktamun. Vizier.
I think.
White and blue, so just 2 mana for a 2/2 legendary creature, human cleric. So these are, by the way, currently identical to Hapatra in terms of CMC and everything else, except for the kind of mana. At the beginning of combat on your turn, target creature token you control gets +1/+1 until end of turn and can't be blocked this turn. And this is the first showing of Embalm on the card we're going to talk about today. Embalm, 3, a white and a blue to exile this card from your graveyard. Create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a white zombie human cleric with no mana cost, and Embalm only as a sorcery. So, very interesting.
This, if you watched again Game Nights Episode 6, you saw there's a very interesting, what's the word, interaction with your commander, the command zone, and your graveyard, because you can actually play Temet, and then let Temet go to the graveyard, and then use the Embalm, and then you put the token out, and instead of exiling Temet, you put it back in the command zone. And so, basically, after you've cast Temet for the second time, every time after that, you may as well let it go to the graveyard and just pay 5 to get your commander back out, because the commander tax is going to keep growing, but the embalm cost will stay the same.
Yeah, so it kind of gives you this double usage out of this card, which is really cool, and we haven't seen that ever, I don't think, in Commander before. So I think Temet has the highest probability for me if I wanted to build a commander outside of Samut from these legendary creatures.
Should also say that when you make the token version of Temet, when you embalm, that token is now affected by Temet's own ability.
Right.
And so, you know, Temet can obviously give other creatures unblockable and +1/+1, but when Temet is in mummy form, the zombie form, I should say, can give himself +1/+1 and unblockable. So there's probably a lot of reasons in that deck to just embalm even the first time that Temet dies.
Yeah, and the way that Mel built the deck was with living weapons.
Super smart.
So the germ tokens that came into play could be affected by Temet and just smash in for tons of damage. So yeah, she did a really awesome job with that deck. I liked it a lot.
Bone Hoarder is super scary in the Temet deck. Yeah, it just comes down and you're like, wait, you can make it unblockable and it's like a 32-32?
Yeah, that's the game.
All right, let's talk about the new Planeswalkers. This first one, man, there's a lot of people talking about this.
Yeah, they certainly like making hot, strong Gideons.
So Gideon of the Trials is 1 white-white for a Planeswalker. Gideon comes in with 3 loyalty, so 3 mana for a 3 loyalty Planeswalker. Gideon's +1 is until your next turn, prevent all damage target permanent would deal.
Target permanent, very notable.
His 0 ability, he actually has 2 0 abilities. So the first 0 ability is until end of turn, Gideon becomes a 4/4 human soldier creature with indestructible that's still a planeswalker, prevent all damage that would be dealt to him this turn. So until end of turn, he becomes a 4/4, you can attack or whatever, and he can't take damage.
Yeah, that's the stereotypical Gideons always do this kind of thing. They turn into a beefy dude, and then they can smack you, and they're indestructible.
And then they're back to a planeswalker on the other turn. And then his second zero ability, this is the one everyone's freaking out about, is you get an emblem with: as long as you control a Gideon Planeswalker, you can't lose the game, and your opponents can't win the game.
Sort of a Platinum Angel-esque effect on Gideon.
On an emblem.
And you get the emblem immediately, so it's his ulti, kind of, but it costs 0, so it doesn't kill Gideon, who comes down with 3 loyalty. And you can have any Gideon out after this one leaves, and it counts as a Planeswalker-Gideon, and then the effect is turned on where you can't lose the game, and your opponents can't win the game.
Yep, I don't see what all the excitement is, honestly. I think it's fine. I don't think it's crazy.
I mean, if you love Gideon and you have a bunch of Gideons in a deck, go for it. I mean,
sure.
I mean, if you're playing a white deck that has any of the other Gideons, this is, I think, an auto-include because the emblem is pretty powerful, considering the fact that you have the probability of getting another Gideon out at some point.
Yeah, I just think the whole, like, can't win the game, your opponents can't. Whatever.
It's definitely
can't lose, can't win. It's totally overvalued. The fact that is that they can still kill Gideon. So, and planeswalkers like that just aren't long for this world in multiplayer very often. And if you're playing another card to basically protect Gideon, like you play Original Avacyn to give him indestructible, well, you could already do that with Platinum Angel and stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't change that much. I actually think this card's not very good, because the great thing about planeswalkers in general is that if they stay on the battlefield, over time, they just accrue you so much value. You usually are constantly getting a card. You're making a token every turn. Right. Every turn, your board position is better than it was last turn. Well, this Gideon doesn't have a single mode that does that. So the first one prevents all damage something does. Well, every turn.
That can be useful-ish. But
it's not that it's bad. It's just it doesn't accrue you. Like, yeah. I use that this turn. Then it comes around to my next turn. That's not, it's not like I still have something from what I did before.
Yeah, and you're not building up to a big ultimate either.
Exactly. You know? And then the zero ability, he just attacks. That again is not, he doesn't get bigger. He's not a 5/5, then a 6/6, then a 7/7. So it's not accruing you any value. And then again, the emblem is not something that over time increases your ability to win the game. So Gideon, I think, is, I think people are just going way overboard. It's just
it's
not that good.
It's a card for a standard and modern, yeah. Potentially. Yeah.
It's not that great in Commander. I mean, again, there are some combos, obviously, you could set up with it, but you could already do those combos with other cards, so this is just one more piece, I guess. Yeah.
All right. This Planeswalker, though, I do like. Liliana, Death's Majesty. 3BB for a 5 loyalty Planeswalker Liliana. Her +1, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Put the top two cards of your library into your graveyard. Already better than Gideon, if you think about what we were saying earlier. Her -3, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. That creature is a black zombie in addition to its other colors and types.
Notice there's no restriction on the CMC of that card.
Yeah.
Or anything. Just return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
It can be new Emrakul.
That's insanity.
Yeah. So her +1 works well with her -3. It puts cards into the graveyard. Obviously, if your deck is like mine to have one and has ways to discard huge things, this card gets very, very powerful very fast. -7, destroy all non-zombie creatures. So this Liliana is much more promising for EDH. It's all three abilities are relevant, and all three abilities are ones that you can build around and really abuse in the game.
This is obviously the type of card where if it sits there for very long, everyone's just going to lose, right? Because you know, make a zombie, you know.
And eventually you're going to drop something in the graveyard that's just going to wreck everyone.
Reanimate something huge, or just destroy all non-zombies, and your zombies are still there. So
well, speaking of powerful Planeswalkers, this last one on the board...
Wow. This is a little bit insane. So this is the first Planeswalker we've had with an X in their casting cost.
Whoa.
It's Nissa, Steward of Elements. It costs green, blue, and X. So it's a Planeswalker Nissa that comes in with X loyalty. So if you pay 5 mana total, then it's a 3 loyalty when it comes in. Obviously, that scales. +2, Scry 2.
+2, that's good.
Yeah, so... Yeah, +2 is good. And Scry 2 is close to draw a card, not exactly as good.
It's getting there.
The zero ability is look at the top card of your library. If it's a land or a creature card with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of loyalty counters on Nissa, you may put it onto the battlefield. So it cheats stuff into play, and it doesn't take away the loyalty counters, right? So if Nissa's at, like, loyalty is at 8, and you zero, you look at the top card, and if it's...
Terastodon.
Boom. Just put it on a play.
Yeah,
it's really good. We've said this so many times.
And it's also a May ability, so you don't have to. You can be like, I'm just going to draw it next turn and play it because I want a cast trigger or something.
This is cheating things into play, and it's doing it off the top of your library, so it's drawing you that card too.
And a huge problem with Planeswalkers is you play it, you do their +1 and hope they don't die. Here you can play a giant Nissa and then get another creature card off the top of your library, way better than like 3/1/1s to protect her or whatever.
Especially if you're in a deck that's got like Sensei's Divining Top, or Scroll Rack, and you know, it's in blue, so you could have Brainstorms and things where you're just taking a card from your hand, putting it on your library, and you know exactly what you're gonna get. And then the -6, which is our ultimate, not as relevant in Commander, but still, you know, I could see points where you do it.
Yeah.
Is you untap up to 2 target lands you control, they become 5/5 elemental creatures with flying and haste until end of turn. They're still lands. So you just sort of smack somebody for 10 if they don't have any flyers.
Yeah. Or you ramp yourself by untapping 2 lands.
That's a really good point. Maybe you might sometimes do that. I mean, I think the...
I mean, Nykthos.
I think the zero ability is kind of crazy if you've got your library manipulation going.
Oh, notice how her +2 with Scry 2 means that you can draw one of the cards and then put the other one on the battlefield with her zero.
In fact, in the pre-release, I believe Graham did this where Scryed 2 and then the next turn activated Nissa and had that 6/7 hexproof guy on top of his library and just put it into play for free. That was bonkers. So it's self-contained a little bit. You know, you don't get as much selection as you would with Scroll Rack or something, but Nissa is going to be very good. And the fact that she scales with the game. So if you've got 13 mana, then her loyalty comes in at 11 already.
Yeah, this card is crazy.
Yeah, we've just never seen that before. That's going to be a very good card, I think. Not in every deck.
No,
but
but in most green and blue decks that are running creatures, there's no reason not to play something like Nissa.
Yeah.
Just a lot of value off of one card. And you can play her for one loyalty if you want. You can play her for eight loyalty. She scales with the game. Oh, that card is everything.
Card is
best
good.
Best Planeswalker in a long time.
Card is good.
All right, next up, we're going to go into the colors now. So we're going to start with the one, the only, red, greatest color in Magic the Gathering.
You can tell Jimmy was in charge of the outline for this episode because we're starting with red.
Yeah. The first card is Combat Celebrant. It's two and a red for a creature human warrior. That's a 4/1, and this is our first example of exert. So if Combat Celebrant hasn't been exerted this turn, you may exert it as it attacks. When you do, untap all other creatures you control, and after this phase, there is an additional combat phase. We've seen this effect a lot on a lot of different cards. This is on a creature. So you can only do it once a turn. That's why they made sure that if it hasn't been exerted this turn.
However, there are, of course, infinite combos.
Yeah, and there are ways to also, you know, I don't know, give it haste. So three mana with a haster swinging in, you automatically get another combat step. Usually the extra combat step is contingent on something or like a big spell, but this is cool. It's on the creature. You don't see it as often on creatures, I don't think.
I mean, it's another target for Kiki Jiki for Splinter Twin because it untaps all your other creatures. So you Kiki it, attack with the Kiki copy, untap everything, including Kiki, on the neck.
Yeah.
Then you make another copy, and then that one hasn't exerted. You exert it again.
Yeah. Next turn, if it doesn't have haste, in the next turn, both the copy and the Comet Celebrant can attack. Oh, my gosh. That's actually really intense.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, you have to have an attack that makes sense because they could block the original and then you only have one copy for the next combat. You know, it's not exactly Zealous Conscripts, but I think there's some usages. Oh man, this next one is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
It's really good with the new Gideon.
They're killing a Minotaur though, so maybe that's a bad thing. It's not. No, it better not be Neheb.
You're like, no, I don't think so. It better not be.
Better, of course not. Jeez, what are you talking about?
It's Glorious End. This is two in a red for an instant. It says end the turn. So if you're familiar with Sundial of the Infinite, it's a little bit like that. You exile all spells and abilities on the stack, including this card, and the player whose turn it is discards down to his or her maximum hand size, and then damage wears off your creatures, and this turn and until end of turn effects end. So it's just turns over.
Yeah.
Nothing else can happen. If it's before combat, they don't get a combat step. You know, if you do it in the upkeep, they don't get a draw step. It just ends their turn. That just moves to the end of their turn. So it's very powerful.
And but then the most red thing ever.
Yeah. So after you end the turn, it says at the beginning of your next end step, you lose the game.
Womp.
So you basically get to just end somebody's turn. You're probably going to do it during their upkeep or something.
Yeah.
And then you have to win before your end step. Otherwise, you lose the game. But see, here's why it's good with like New Gideon.
Right, you can't lose.
You can emblem and say it says you can't lose and your opponents can't win, and so or Platinum Angel and things that say similar things. Mm-hmm. You could basically Glorious End on somebody's turn and still live. Now that's pretty fringe, but I'm just saying like you could if you can get around that and at the beginning of your next end step you lose the game thing, then this card's extremely powerful.
Well, right, because red has never had this effect before. Normally it's on Time Stop or Sundial of the Infinite, but now Glorious End gives you this instant speed way of doing it out of nowhere, and of course if you can stop it, then great. But there have been times, I play Final Fortune in my red decks as well, because there are times when it's like, I need to just win the game, and Final Fortune lets you take an extra turn, and then you lose the game at the end of that turn. So cards like that and cards like Glorious End, this stops someone from just going off and winning the game immediately.
Yeah, if somebody's in the middle of like storming off or something, well, it's hard because it doesn't have split second. You have to time things right, but you can often use this on like, or the Craterhoof Behemoth and the turn before they get to attack, that kind of thing.
Or they can attack and then you end the turn before damage goes through. Yeah.
Yep. So it's this type of effect is very powerful and very unique. And I think because of that, it will see play in our format and it'll be good.
Yep.
You just have to build around the ability to not lose or just take that into account and be like, I can win next turn.
Yeah. And that's, it's thrilling when that happens.
All right, you're such a red player. Yeah, to me, it's terrifying.
I've done it a couple of times. It's very satisfying. All right. The next red card is Harsh Mentor. One and a red for a 2/2 human cleric. Whenever an opponent activates an ability of an artifact, creature, or land on the battlefield, if it isn't a mana ability, Harsh Mentor deals 2 damage to that player. So this is just kind of like a red Hate Bear-ish-esque card in that it just pings everyone, kind of like Eidolon of the Great Revel. This is one of those ways that just people just die without realizing it and just slowly lose, you know. This is like got the Fever Divisions effect where at the end of a game, this may have done 20 damage or something.
Yeah, true. It just depends on what decks are in your meta, how many activated abilities that aren't mana abilities are in use. But there tends to be, you know, a decent amount in your average game.
I think Harsh Mentor will be one of those cards that if your deck wants to kill people like this, then great. But it will do a lot more work than you, I think, you give it credit for.
All right, the next one is Heart Piercer Manticore. It's 2 red for a 4/3 creature Manticore. When it enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice another creature. And when you do, the mana cord deals damage equal to that creature's power to target creature or player. So whatever you sacrifice, it sort of flings them at the person and does that amount of damage. And then it has embalm for 5 and a red. So you could fling, it could fling itself, right? Oh, no, it's another creature. Sorry.
Yeah, it comes, yeah.
Come in, fling something big, hit somebody in the face for a lot. Then when it dies, you embalm it. It comes back in, fling something else at them. I'm using the word fling. That's probably not a good word since that is a card in the set. it chucks the creature at them and does that amount of damage.
If you give Heartpiercer Manticore some kind of way to give it infect.
Boom. Craig Blanchett is so happy.
Yeah, but it's going to be tough because it's an ETB effect. So.
And it's in red.
Yeah. But interesting card. It's definitely a way to push through damage.
Yeah, you can throw the creature at a play, or the one that's sacrificed, mm-hmm. when you can throw that at a creature. So yeah. It can be a removal spell too.
I want to pair this up with something like Sneak Attack, where you can cheat in the creature for really cheap and then play the Heart Piercer, and it's going to die anyway. So you can do it after it attacks, or you can do it, you know, even before the attacks to huck 10 damage or whatever at someone's face.
Yeah, that's a good one, actually. You know, you like Ulamog, Sneak Attack, then throw that at somebody's face. Here comes a Ulamog.
And you're just like, what the heck? All right, our last red card. This one's okay. But it's interesting.
It is interesting. I don't think it's necessarily good for Commander, but it's interesting. It's a... it's your turn.
Is it? It's always my turn. Soulscar Mage, red, for a 1/2 creature human wizard with prowess. I just lose the game after this turn. If a source you control would deal non-combat damage to a creature an opponent controls, put that many -1/-1 counters on that creature instead. So this turns all of your Hurricanes and all of your Earthquakes.
Blasphemous Axe. That just kills everything anyway.
Into -1/-1 counters. But it will kill indestructible creatures
as well.
That's
a really good point. Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
So it's an interesting way for red to, or mono red specifically, to kill things. Because they have a lot of damage-based effects. And sometimes even just neutering a creature can be akin to killing it as well.
Yeah, I like that, actually. It's non-combat damage basically has wither.
Yeah. So it's an interesting effect. It feels like an enchantment-based effect, but it also has prowess, so then you can swing in for,
yeah,
you know,
I think I would like it a little better if it was an enchantment, honestly.
I mean, I would like a lot of things better if they were enchantments.
Yeah, good point.
But yeah, it's an interesting card. I think it's pretty decent. I mean, in a mono-red deck is what I'm usually thinking is the kind of deck that you'd want this in, so...
All right, now we're moving on to what colors next?
White. So the first card, oh yes. This card is sweet. This card has a really cool token, by the way. They have the most tokens ever in this set, by the way. So,
because a lot of individual things need tokens rather than just like there's warriors and that's it. Angel of Sanctions. This is 3WW3WW for a 3/4 flying angel. When Angel of Sanctions enters the battlefield, you may exile target non-land permanent in opponent controls until Angel of Sanction leaves the battlefield. So it's sort of Banisher Priest something.
Yeah. Non-land permanent, which is cool.
Yep. Oh, yeah. True. Yeah,
not
it's not just
not
creature.
Just a creature, yeah.
Yeah, it O-rings something, basically. Yeah. But it's on a 3/4 flyer. And it has Embalm for 5 and a white. So even after they get rid of it, you can put it back out and do it again. So pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. It's got double usage, and if you know you want to beat down, then it has that ability as well.
Yeah,
this next one is nuts too.
So yeah, I like the fact that you can reuse it. Oh yeah, next. Well, we got Parallel Lives, but for white.
Yeah, what is happening in this set? Samut's untapping creatures, and then we have Anointed Procession, 3 and a white for an enchantment. If an effect would create 1 or more tokens under your control, it creates twice that many tokens instead, in white.
It's basically Parallel Lives, just in white.
I mean, it kind of makes sense in a way that, you know, white loves having the weenie factor into it. And a lot of token-based strategies are in white as well. So now they get a little extra help, which is crazy.
It's a good card. If you're making tokens, then, you know, play that card.
Yeah, you kind of get a double up if you're playing a green-white deck. Then you get to do Parallel Lives and that card.
And Doubling Season?
Yeah.
Just every time you play a token of any kind, you get like 15 of them?
Yeah.
Seems
hey,
good.
You're going to read the best card in the set next.
I had made a pledge at the pre-release that if I opened this card, I would 100% play it.
Yeah.
I did not open this card.
Darn.
It's Approach of the Second Sun. Hold on. I can do this. I can get through it.
You got this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's 6 and a white for a sorcery. If Approach of the Second Sun was cast from your hand and you've cast another spell named Approach of the Second Sun this game, you win the game. Otherwise, put Approach of the Second Sun into its owner's library, 7th from the top, and you gain 7 life. Okay, you cast Approach of the Seventh Sun for the first time in the game. You gain 7 life, and then you put it 7th from the top of your library. Then when you draw it 7 turns later, you cast it, and now you win the game because you cast it before.
And you gain 7 life, which kept you alive just long enough
seven
to
life.
Play it again. Now, my question is, what if you reiterate or you fork this spell?
Yes, you win.
You win?
Yep.
Okay, cool. 2-card combo.
That's how you win. You approach the second sun forked, and then you win. Or
so
you could
the
just...
second copy sees that the first one has resolved, and then you're like, oh, sweet.
You can also do stuff like if you got Vedalken Orrery out, you can cast it on end step, Vampiric Tutor for it. And then draw it and cast it. You know, that kind of stuff.
I kind of like that a little better.
Yeah. I mean, there's ways to break it. It's just not a fun way for me to win, so I'm probably not going to do it. But yeah, sure. It's like Felidar Sovereign or something like that, where people can just get you sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a card. All right. Next up is a big reprint. This is a card that has been, I think, needing a reprint for a long time. It's definitely EDH playable. It's Aven Mind Sensor, 2W for a creature bird wizard. 2/1 with flash and flying, but importantly, if an opponent would search a library, that player searches the top 4 cards of that library instead. One time I used a fetch land, and then Kessler played this on me, and then I got nothing.
That sucks when that happens. It shuts down a lot of tutoring, and usually because it has flash, you play it in response to a tutor.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, they're like, I'm going to go find something in the top 4 cards of my library now because I can't look through the rest of it. Yeah.
I mean, this is really powerful. This can stop someone from tutoring out their win condition.
Yep. So. I think it's really good in... Especially if your meta is combo deck heavy, because most combo decks are trying to search their libraries for combos. So
yeah, certainly.
What else we got
next? This is a fun one. Regal Caracal.
Oh yeah, this is the
Cat Lord.
Yeah, Regal Caracal is 3W for a creature cat. It's a 3/3. It says other cats you control get +1/+1 and have lifelink.
Cat tribal.
Why couldn't this be a legendary creature? Okay. And then it says, when Regal Caracal enters the battlefield, create 2/1/1 cat creature tokens with lifelink. So even if the Regal Caracal dies, the cats still have lifelink. But they're 2/2s as long as the Regal thing is around.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So it's a 7 power of and life toughness link. With lifelink for 5 mana.
I guess the Regal Caracal doesn't have lifelink.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a wonderful blink target. If you have a cat tribal deck, then even better.
Why isn't it legendary?
Because, Josh, it's just a cat. It's just very regal.
People would have been so happy if this was legendary. I wish it was.
Well, maybe in Hour of Devastation, we will see a legendary cat. Who knows? But yeah, this is cool. I mean, other cats get +1/+1 on lifelink. Obviously, making 2 tokens, it's the Cloud Cat Ranger.
Cloud Cat Ranger.
Instead of Cloud Goat Ranger. But
if you play that other Parallel Lives on turn 4 and then this on turn 5, that's pretty good. And you get 4 cats. And
4 such. Cats.
I don't know. It's fine. It's nothing crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A fun card.
Yeah, I want my 5 mana spells to do a little bit more.
All right, let's talk about our first Aftermath split card. This is Dusk to Dawn.
Oh yeah, they're all something to something, by the way.
Yeah, Noah Bradley drew the art on this. So the top part of Dusk that you can cast from your hand is 2W for a sorcery. Destroy all creatures with power 3 or greater. We've talked about Retribution of Meek on the show. This can be very, very good in a white deck because, you know, you get to just kill everyone else's stuff and all your tokens live.
Yeah, I think there's a whole bunch of decks that just generally have smaller creatures.
Yeah.
And this is just great in it because it's one-sided board wipe, but it's only 4 mana. Most one-sided board wipes are like in Garruk's Wake, they cost 9 mana.
Yeah.
Or Cyclonic Rift. But if you built your deck around, you know, and this card's good in it, all of a sudden for 4 mana, you're just like, kill all your stuff, but I still have all mine.
Yeah. And for 5 mana.
So this is the Aftermath. You have to cast this version of, or this side of the card from the graveyard.
Yep. Dawn, 3W for a sorcery. Aftermath, cast the spell only from your graveyard, then exile it. This is what I don't like about these cards. Return all creature cards with power 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand. Whoa! That's actually really cool, right?
Yeah, my neck hurts.
Yeah, I have to go the other direction and sort of balance it out.
No, because then I'm upside down when I do it the other way.
No, that's fine. I just got to balance it out. But yeah, Dawn, this card seems very powerful. For 1 more mana, you can get all of the creatures back that are 2 power or less, and they're not going to get killed by Dusk, but presumably you're running this in a deck with, you know, Retribution of the Meek and lower power creatures. Not as good with tokens, but still a great way to buy back so many different kinds of cards that are very important in white.
Yeah, and it's 2 effects on 1 card, which is always going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, 2 real effects on cards.
Retribution of the
Meek
too.
Is just playable. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you just get like another added effect on your Retribution of the Meek is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a playable card. We talk about versatility all the time too. So that's just, if you need that other effect, you can, you know, you can have access to it without giving up an entire card. You just play it in the slot that's for your board wipes also. All right, let's move to the greatest color.
Can't do red again. What are you talking about?
This card. Okay. This is the card in the set that everyone's going off about. It's As Foretold.
As Foretold. People
love
it.
That's the name of the card, As Foretold. The card was not foretold. Okay. Two and a blue. Enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a time counter on As Foretold. Once each turn, you may pay zero rather than pay the mana cost for a spell you cast with converted mana cost X or less, where X is the number of time counters on As Foretold. Sounds complicated. If As Foretold has a counter on it, then you can play a spell each turn. Mm-hmm. That means my turn, Jimmy's turn, Maria's turn, Megan's turn. For if it has one counter, you could play a one cast spell for zero.
Yeah. And you're casting it as well, I believe. Yep. Which is pretty crazy.
Also, zero does count as a number of counters. So you can cast zero casting cost stuff for free, which sounds weird because you could always do that, right? No, because there's cards like Ancestral Visions, Restore Balance, things like that, that technically have a CMC of zero. Lotus Bloom, I think, is one.
Yeah. I mean, this card seems very powerful. I would play this in a Mizzix deck. I would play this in the Atraxa deck because you can proliferate the counters.
This card is one of those cards that's insane on a Paradox Engine level. Because it's cheating of mana cost, right? And what do we always say? The most broken things you can do are generally the cheating of mana cost. So,
pretty good.
Take a look at that card. It doesn't go in every single deck.
No.
But it's very good. And then think of a deck that has a ton of instants and things where you're just able to, on everybody's turn, use all that quote-unquote mana. It just gets ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're chaining it into like card draw spells and your Serum Visions and stuff that you can do as soon as you play it, you know, or as soon as you get one counter on it, you know.
I think there's a lot of people out there, and Paradox Engine, we saw this a lot too, that are sort of on the ban train for a lot of things super fast. And here's what I would say. Not that stuff won't get banned or shouldn't be banned or whatever. You know, I don't think anything should be banned. But I think the meta of Commander in general may have to move a little bit more towards the ability to remove artifacts and enchantments than what we're currently at right now. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. We just may have to run more answers than we're used to. So, you know, I think that's okay. I think
it's definitely okay because cards like Skullclamp exist. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I find that card more dangerous than Paradox Engine because Paradox takes a little bit of setup, but with Skullclamp, you just have X1s and you're just drawing a thousand cards, you know?
Yeah, so I think that may be something to consider before we run around like the world's on fire, you know, everything's going to hell in a handbasket, you know? Run a few more Corrosion Grips and some other removal. It's probably okay.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we have Curator of Mysteries. We'll just go through this one really fast. Two blue for a 4/4 Flying Sphinx. It just says, whenever you cycle or discard another card, scry one. And this also has cycling for blue mana, so you can pay blue, discard, and draw a card. So if you have a lot of discard outlets or a lot of cycling cards in your deck, this just gives you a sort of an engine to help you scry over time, and eventually you'll get a lot of value out of it. But otherwise, it's very sort of fixated on the cycling discard bit.
Still a 4-mana 4/4 flyer, too. It's not horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And on the same level, there's Drake Haven, which is 2 and a blue for an enchantment that says whenever you cycle or discard a card, you may pay 1 generic mana. If you do, you create a 2/2 blue Drake creature token with flying.
This is the only card I want to open in limited, by the way. I'm just so excited about the cycling deck.
Can you just make 2/2 flyers? Okay.
If there's a cycling deck, and there's a ton of cycling, so there might be now, then that card is really good in it.
Yeah.
You just Talrand when you cycle, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
The next card we're talking about is New Perspectives. It's 5 and a blue.
For cycling.
for an enchantment. It says, whenever when New Perspectives enters the battlefield, draw 3 cards. So 6 mana, draw 3 cards, not great. But then it says, as long as you have 7 or more cards in your hand, you can pay 0 rather than pay the cycling costs. Mm. So you can just cycle for free once you have New Perspectives out. Pretty good. Yeah. I can also see this getting some play in like a Brago deck where you can blink it. You can blink it and just draw three every time. That seems okay.
Yeah, and then you just build a bunch of cycling into it.
Yeah, or you don't even have to. Maybe just drawing 3 every turn is good.
Yeah, that's true.
It's 6 mana, so I don't know, but I'm just saying you could do that.
All right, next up we have the Vizier of Tumbling Sands. 2 and a blue for a 1/3 creature human cleric. You guys ready for this one?
Tap. I like this card a lot.
Untap another target permanent.
That's all I ever want to do in life.
Pretty good.
Just tap stuff and untap it.
And it doesn't stop there. Cycling for 1 and a blue to discard this card and draw a card. And when you cycle this card at instant speed, by the way, untap target permanent. Whoa, that's really cool. Because we've talked about how awesome it is that you can bring back, what's his name, Fate Stitcher from the graveyard for one last untap. This has the same thing, but you're also drawing a card off of it.
Yeah. I love cards like this. You know, The fact that it says untap target permanent, so you can do it with the Gilded Lotuses and things like that, and, yeah. and not just make one mana, but make a bunch of mana. This is the most Josh card in the set for sure. If I can be tapping and untapping things, I'm just happy. I wish it tapped things. That's why a lot of people were like, do you like it more than Fate Stitcher? No.
No,
I don't. Because Fate Stitcher is also a removal spell. It also taps down their scary thing so it can't attack. But I still like this card quite a lot. It's yeah. closer to Kiora's Follower, which is a card I always play when I can.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. with the whole cycling thing on top of it, which is really neat.
It does make my favorite cards like Market Festivals and stuff more playable when there's more stuff out there that can yeah. untap the, you know, if you have a land or an artifact that taps for multiple manas, then all of a sudden these cards become insanely powerful because they read tap for 4 mana or tap for 3 mana.
Yeah, this could be a removal spell. Someone taps out and someone's like, I'm going to swing at you with this thing. But like, now you can block.
Whoop. Yeah, true.
So
I like it.
Yeah. Here's another card with your Brago deck.
Oh, yeah. So Trial of Knowledge, which is 3 and a blue for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you draw 3 cards and then discard a card. And it has all the trials have this, which I don't think is going to be relevant in Commander, but they all say when a cartouche enters the battlefield, then you return it to its owner's hand. But this is, I think, even better than New Perspectives in the Brago deck because it's only 4 mana, draw 3 cards and discard a card. But yeah. I think blinking that every turn would be, you know, pretty good.
All right, we have another split card. It's Commit to Memory. So commit 3 and a blue for an instant. Put target spell or non-land permanent into its owner's library, second from the top. That's pretty good. You can just get rid of something at instant speed.
It's a counterspell too, right?
Yeah, it puts a spell.
Yeah. So if it's on the battlefield or on the stack, you can still put it second from the top. I think that versatility yeah. right there is really good.
Yeah, as long as it's not a land. And then there is Memory. Oh, God. 4 blue-blue for a sorcery. Aftermath, cast this card only from your graveyard, then exile it. Each player shuffles his or her hand and graveyard into his or her library, then draws 7 cards.
So, oh, so this is, what is this, Time Twister?
Time Twister-esque, yeah. It's got the whole windfall. Just, yeah, draw a lot of cards.
Because Leovold just wanted more of that stuff.
Yeah, because the whole, like, this is a target, the commit is like a targeted removal spell, and Memory is just like, oh, yeah, let's just have everyone draw 7.
Well, what you're supposed to do is put it second from the top, and mm-hmm. then use Memory, right? And that shuffles everybody's graveyard, so they're not going to get the card that you put second from the top. So they'll get it back right away. I mean, still in their library somewhere, but
I had
this in a draft deck.
Oh, yeah? How was it?
Because, you know, after the pre-release, we draft, mm-hmm. and I drafted the cycling deck, which was awesome.
Did it work?
And that card was great because I couldn't mill myself out from all the cycling. So.
Nice. That's perfect.
Yeah, and it worked. It was that deck was super fun.
Oh, awesome.
I don't know if it was super powerful, but, I mean, I didn't lose. All right, on to green.
I think that's a good enough gauge.
The first green card is Champion of Ronas. It's 3 and a green for a 3/3 Jackal Warrior. You may exert Champion of Ronas as it attacks. Again, exert means that it will not untap during your next untap phase. When you do exert it, you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. So it Elvish Piper something out on yeah. attack when you exert. People are going crazy about this. I think it's okay. Elvish Piper still seems better than me.
Yeah, Piper's better. But, you know, in a deck where you're trying to attack a lot and just keep the pressure on, giving haste to your creatures, you have the other guy that gives you, you know, another combat step. You know, Champion of Ronas does have the ability, especially if you have Champion of Ronas put out a creature, you have a haste enabler, then that creature you put out with the extra combat step, woo!
It has to have an extra combat step. That's the problem. Yeah. That's why I think Piper is a little better, because you can Piper out something before combat and then attack with the new thing.
Yeah. So, anyway, Champion of Ronas, still an interesting card. And Exert, I'm still interested to see if anyone can really break it. But I'm looking for, of course, you want Vigilance to really make that card pop off. Here's a big one. Harvest Season. 2 and a green for the happiest little mummy you've ever seen.
This mummy is super happy.
For a sorcery, search your library for up to X basic land cards, where X is the number of tapped creatures you control, and put those cards onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. Whoa.
So if you didn't hear that the first time, as many tapped creatures as you have, you go find that many lands and put them into play tapped.
Basics. But hey, whoa. If
as many tapped creatures as you have.
If this was like 3 mana for 4 lands, 3 mana for 3 lands, 3 mana for even 2 lands.
This card is ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, obviously you wanted to play it in a 1 or 2 color deck. That way you have more basic lands to fetch out.
Deck doesn't have like, besides 5 color, most decks have like 10 to 12. You're rarely going to, you know. You'll be like, oh crap, I have 10 tapped creatures and I can only go get 8 lands. Well, this is horrible.
Here's some combos. You should play this with Opposition, so you can tap your creatures at instant speed and then play Harvest Season. You should play this with 1 Smuggler's Copter.
Because 1 Smuggler's Copter.
Everyone
you're like,
can crew it.
Everyone crews the 1 copter. Play this thing. Get 11 lands. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, even just like swinging out, you lose a couple creatures and then you play Harvest Season. I don't know. This card's great.
This card's bonkers city.
It is up there in terms of power. I like it quite a lot.
The next one is basically the Reclamation Sage of the set. It's Manglehorn, 2 and a green for a 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, you may destroy target artifact, and then artifacts your opponent's control enter the battlefield tapped. So
that's really neat.
The fact that it has that little added versatility.
Prowling Serpipard. The weirdest name I've ever seen
in a
while.
It's Serpent and Leopard.
It's a cat snake. It's 1 green-green for a 4/3.
Leopent didn't sound good.
Yeah. Creature, cat snake. Prowling Serpipard can't be countered. And creature spells you control can't be countered. So
this is that Dromoka thing, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, you... It's not the exact same because they can counter non-creature spells, but still one of those cards you can play on your turn to make sure you can do what you need to. It's the anti-control card. And I've learned firsthand that those cards are good.
Yeah, pretty good. Next up, this card destroyed you in the pre-release.
Yeah, so Adam played this against me only in one game. I won the other two, so don't freak out, everybody. Sandworm.
Strictly better.
Sandworm Conversion, 6 and 2 green, so 8 mana for an enchantment. Creatures with flying can't attack you or planeswalkers you control. And then at the beginning of your end step, create a 5/5 green worm creature token. So you get a 5/5 worm every end step. And then, yeah, you're sort of immune to flying.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. It's eight mana. I said, yeah, I was calling it no fly zone. And
no fly zone plus you get a 5/5.
Yeah.
Get some token doublers up in there.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
I think it's playable. It's expensive.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're in green, right? So you can pump out a lot of mana. And once you have that out, wow.
Yeah, it really stops a lot of aggression in the air. And hopefully you have enough big creatures on the ground, including the 5/5 you make at the turn you play it to stop anyone from hitting you on the bottom.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. All right. Vizier. Oh, I keep saying it wrong. Vizier of the Menagerie. This art is crazy. 3 and a green for a 3/4.
This art is crazy.
It's the creature Naga Cleric with all the friends.
People are mad in particular about this because this is not a snake, even though it looks like a snake.
It does. But it's a Naga. Yeah, there's a whole thing.
I'm not going to get into that.
You may look at the top card of your
library. Because I don't like tribal.
Hold on. This ability is crazy. You may look at the top card of your library. You may do this at any time. Not many cards allow you to do that.
You look, right? It's not like Oracle of Moldiah where everybody gets to see it. That's you looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you may cast the top card of your library if it's a creature card. Sweet. Card advantage. And you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast creature spells.
Cast any creature spell, not just the one on the top of your library. Any creature spell you cast, you don't have to worry about mana.
A lot of text, and it's all pretty cool.
This card is going to be very good, right? Because it's similar to Oracle of Moldiah, Corsair of Krufix type things. Now, it doesn't ramp you in the same way, but what it does is give you card advantage. You know what's coming. You know if you want to shuffle your deck, that's very powerful. You also know for things like, you know, like the new Nissa.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, I can check that card, see what it is. Oh, I'll activate Nissa because I know what that card is. Or there's a million cards that care about the top card of your library. And so just being able to look at it is very powerful. And then it's just nice to be able to not have to worry about mana cost for your creatures anymore, about colors. So
yeah,
I just think this is it has just so many things that it's doing that it all just sort of adds up. And it's only 4 mana for a 3/4, so you're not giving up anything to
look
do it.
Look how happy that little Naga is with all his friends.
Yay. Why is it not a snake?
Who knows? Hey, guess what? It's time for you to read a freaking split card and break your neck.
This is Mouth to Feed, so it's one of the Aftermath cards. Mouth is 2 and a green for a sorcery. Create a 3/3 green hippo creature token.
Tribal!
Whoa, that's what hippos sound like.
Tribal, strictly better tribal card for hippo decks.
And then the Aftermath portion, which you can cast from your graveyard as a sorcery, is called Feed, and it says... Draw a card for each creature you control with power 3 or greater.
Yeah, 3 and a green for a sorcery. Huge draw spell, potentially.
That has to be the thumbnail for this episode, by the way, is us doing this. Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Okay. So card draw, it's good. The front end is not great for Commander, right?
Front end is definitely not good. You'd want to discard this or just play a 3-mana 3/3 kind of, essentially.
It's not the worst to do that, and you might have Doubling Season, or what's the new Doubling Season called, the white one? What was that called?
It is called...
Crap.
Anointed Procession. Duh, we knew that all along.
So if you have Anointed Procession and, you know, you're making 2 3/3s, it's a little bit better.
Yeah.
It's card draw, and if you're making big tokens in a token deck, you know, instead of a lot of little ones, then I could see it being playable.
Yeah, this combined with a Garrick is very good because he puts out 3/3 green beasts and stuff.
I had the Mouth to Feed in my draft deck also.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Nice.
It was very good.
Yeah. Unlimited. Oh my gosh. Archfiend of Ifnir. We are now in black.
It's the 3BB 5/4 creature demon. I don't know whether it's D at the end there. It's a 5/4 with flying, and this is a cycling discard matters card. Whenever you cycle or discard another card, put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponents control, cycling for 2. So this definitely pairs really well with the discard outlets. I would have put this in my Neheb deck immediately because, like, look at this. Just, oh my gosh, it just nerfs everything. It would have destroyed your board.
Oh, yeah.
All your little snakies.
Yeah, this card is pretty insane. And the fact that it has cycling 2 means that it's never dead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you just don't have any other cycling cards or whatever, you're just like, okay, get rid of it.
Okay, fine.
Okay, fine.
Okay, fine. This
card destroyed me. Thank you, Aaron Forsythe. So,
jeez, if only he didn't have any other cards that were super OP and limited to play against you.
So it's called Cruel Reality. It's 5BB for an enchantment or a curse. So you enchant a player. At the beginning of enchanted player's upkeep, that player sacrifices a creature or planeswalker. If the player can't, he or she loses 5 life. So if you have a creature or a planeswalker, you do not have the option to just lose 5 life. You have to choose between your creatures and planeswalkers and sacrifice one. But if you have neither of those things, then you just take 5 damage. This card is very good. It was very good against me in Limited, although I had a slowish deck. It was sealed, and I just couldn't remove it. I think it's not very good in Commander because it only hits one player.
Yeah, but it does destroy that Voltron player so hard.
It's good against a Voltron player, but yeah, it's 7
Pair
mana.
Pair this with Shieldred, and then they're sacrificing 2 creatures every upkeep.
Well, sure. But if you have Shieldred, you're good anyway against that Voltron player. It's 7 mana. There was somebody on Twitter being like, this card seems way too powerful. I don't think it's even that good.
I don't think it's way too powerful. It certainly is good, but it's not great.
I don't think I'll play it. It only hits one player.
All right, let's talk about 3 cards just to get through this. They're all Zombie Matters cards, so that's why I've grouped them together. The first
I don't like tribal.
I know. The first is Liliana's Mastery. She gets a mastery. 3BB for an enchantment. Zombies you control get +1/+1. And when this enchantment enters the battlefield, create 2/2 black zombie creature tokens. So there are 3/3s, 6 power for 5 mana. It's a Lord effect ability. The next,
Lord of the Accursed. I had this in my pre-release deck. It's 2 and a black for a 2/3 zombie creature. It says other zombies you control get +1/+1. So it's an anthem effect for your zombies. And then you can pay 1 and a black, tap the Lord of the Accursed. All zombies gain menace until end of turn.
Now that is actually
That's all zombies. Powerful. So if somebody else has a zombie, you can get to them too, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously for the zombie tribal deck, you'd want to play this card.
That's probably one of the commander decks too, zombies, right? That's one of the... elves, goblins, zombies, something.
I hope they do hippos. Plague Belcher, 2 and a black for creature zombie beast, 5/4 with menace. When Plague Belcher enters the battlefield, put 2 -1/-1 counters on target creature you control, and whenever another zombie you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life.
So I could see zombie decks where they've got so many zombies that they just sack them and kill everybody that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's cool. You can attack with all of them, and anytime someone blocks, then, oh my gosh, each opponent's starting to lose a life. It's one of those things that sort of just gets out of control fast.
And the last black card on our list is Shadow of the Grave. It's 1 and a black for an instant. Return to your hand all cards in your graveyard that you cycled or discarded this turn.
I would have loved this in my deck.
Yeah, those discard decks or decks with like Sire of Insanity or even Wheel of Fortune into this is pretty good.
Wheel of Fortune into this. You can't do it at the same time.
Right.
Shadow of the Grave seems very good if you're just like, I'm going to discard 3 cards to do this ability and then you're going to get them back. It's a cool way to sort of, play around with the discard/cycle ability. Really great art, too. I love that art.
The fact that it's only 2 mana makes it really strong.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go into the multicolored cards. Now, there are a few more of these, as well as a lot of the split cards, so get your neck ready.
Oh, man. My neck hurts literally from looking at that last
one. Just thinking about it.
No, it actually does hurt. Which one of these are we talking about?
Top Bounty? One. On Crop Champion.
Okay, On Crop Champion. 2 green and a white for a 4/4 human warrior. You may exert On Crop Champion as it attacks. If you do, untap all other creatures you control.
Give pseudo vigilance, but more importantly, you get to use mana dorks in green. You get to recast things off of your,
If you had a whole bunch of creatures that want to tap, then I can see using it.
Yeah.
Don't
spend too much time on it. Even Wind Guide, 2 white and a blue for a 2/3 flying vigilance. Creature tokens you control have flying and vigilance.
And it has Embalm.
Yeah. This would have been very good in the Temet deck, obviously, that Mel played, because then all of her living weapons now are flying and they're vigilant.
Oh, crap. So, that would have been really good.
It's a really cool Lord card.
I had this in my draft deck as well. This card is weird. Okay.
Jeez, you're just killing it over there.
Well, I was playing 4 color, too.
Oh, nice.
You know, that's how we roll. Bounty of the Luxa.
That's how you roll.
It's 2 green blue for an enchantment. It was a royal Wii. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, remove all flood counters from Bounty of the Luxa. If no counters were removed this way, put a flood counter on it, and then draw a card. Otherwise, add a colorless, a green, and a blue, so diamond, green, blue, to your mana pool. Okay, another one of these cards. Start of your turn, you look at it. If it has a counter, then you take the counter off, and you add 3 mana to your mana pool.
If no counters, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Start, yeah, I know. Jeez. I played with it, so it's confusing. So you look at the enchantment at the start of your turn. If it already has a counter, you take the counter away, you get the 3 mana. If there's no counters when you look at it at the start of your turn, then you put the counter on and you draw a card.
So this is pre-combat main phase, so you are able to use that mana to cast stuff.
Oh, yeah, sorry, not start of your turn, after the draw step. So every other turn, it draws you a card, and on the opposing turns, the ones where you don't draw a card, it adds 3 mana in the combination of diamond, green, blue. It took way longer to explain that card than any other card probably ever.
Yeah, the idea is you're drawing cards, and then you're able to cast the extra cards you draw with the extra 3 mana.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Slow.
I think
super
if you
slow.
Yeah, it's super slow. If you want to add a lot of flood counters to it, so you're always drawing a card, it could be something. But you know, you could just
no. Play. You need no counters to draw the cards.
Oh,
so in like Atraxa, all that would do is
oh, you remove all the flood counters.
Yeah.
Oh,
so okay, it's hard to do what I think people want to do, which is control whether it has flood counters or not, so they can get only one end of it. It's not impossible. It's just so many hoops to jump through for what. 3 mana or draw a card every turn in you're already in blue.
Well, can we talk about more so we don't have to read these split cards?
My neck hurts. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm up first. It's failure to comply. The first is 1 in the blue for a blue instant. Return target spell to its owner's hand. Pretty powerful. And then comply.
Target spell. So that's spell, yeah. That's only something that...
I need to read the card, Josh.
Sorry. I'm trying to make you stay in that position as long as possible.
Great. Now I'm stuck here. Comply is a 1 white for a sorcery, and it says choose a card name until your next turn. Your opponents can't cast spells with the chosen name. So the idea is you're going to failure their spell, and then you get a comply as a sorcery on your turn and say you can't cast that card until your next turn. So it sort of reflector mages it in a way.
For, 3 mana, I guess.
I mean, I like the ability to return a spell to its owner's hand. I think that's we should give it more credit than it normally has.
Well, and you don't have to name the card that you returned. So
exactly.
You can name any card. So you can name just name their commander. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want. So, yep.
Next
What's
up.
The next one? Oh, Rags to Riches.
Yeah.
So Rags is 2 black for sorcery. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. Pretty straightforward. And then the aftermath side of it is Riches. And it says, each opponent chooses a creature he or she controls, and you gain control of those creatures. So 7 mana, 5 blue for Riches, but you kind of, I was going to say blatant thievery, but on that you get to pick. So they get to pick.
Well, the idea is Rags kills the things you wouldn't want, because it's -2/-2, so no dumb tokens or whatever.
You kind of preacher something from everybody.
Yeah. Interesting card. And again, these are all 2 colors, so you can't just play it in any deck. Heaven and Earth is a green
heaven
red.
Heaven to Earth.
Heaven to Earth, sorry. So Heaven is X and a green for an instant. Heaven deals X damage to each creature with flying. You see that a lot.
Hurricane.
In green.
Not the exact same, obviously. Hurricane hits players.
Yeah. And then Earth is X red for the aftermath side. Earth deals X damage to each creature without flying. So this is a way to essentially get the full board wipe effect with a lot of mana, because you can kill creatures with flying and without flying. The nice thing is that you get to choose how much mana you put into it. You don't need to do like this deals X damage to everything, so you can cast Heaven early and kill some a bunch of stuff, and then on Earth you can cast it to do even more later in the game, and it just has this sort of like, it's nice. It gives you the ability to get rid of flyers at first and then hopefully more creatures
you
without
can
flying.
Even look around and be like, well, there's no flying creature that I want to kill, but there are some on the ground, so I'm just going to play a green, cast Heaven for 0, get it into my graveyard so I can cast the Earth side of it.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, now we're on to the artifacts section. First one is Oracle's Vault. It's 4 mana for an artifact. You tap the Oracle's Vault, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card, and then you put a brick counter on Oracle's Vault. You can also tap the Oracle's Vault and exile the top card of your library. You may until end of turn, you may play that card without paying its mana cost.
There you go.
You can only activate this ability if there are 3 or more brick counters on Oracle's Vault. So the idea is they're sort of building like the pyramids or building the Sphinx, right? So you put a brick on, and once you have 3 bricks, you've built it, and now it has full power.
That's how easy the pyramids were to build.
Yeah, pretty easy. This is cheating of mana cost. We know cheating of mana cost is always good. This is a crazy card.
Very good with Proliferate as well, of course, because you can just get to the brick thing. And the nice thing is this does give you a little bit of card advantage, so I could 100% see playing this in red specifically.
because you're paying two mana, but you do get an extra card. That's sort of the red ability to exile the top card of your library until another attorney may play it.
Yeah. It's really good with stuff like, what was that Vizier that untaps things?
Oh, you mean the blue card?
Yeah. The Fate Stitcher stuff? Yeah, it's good with stuff, Kiora's Follower and stuff, because you just use it three times right
Vizier
in a row.
Vizier of the Tumbling Sands.
Yeah. So you just use the two mana part a couple of times just to get it up to three brick counters, and then you're going off.
Yep. All right, Pyramid of the Pantheon, very similar card, but it only costs one mana to play. It's an artifact, and you can pay two to tap it and add one mana of any color to your mana pool, and then you put a brick counter on the Pyramid of the Pantheon. So you get one mana back, so it technically costs one to do this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you sort of filter two into one.
Yeah, but you get to have any color, so it's a little bit of fixing. But the important thing is that when it gets three brick counters, you can tap it to add three mana of any one color to your mana pool. So this is kind of like Gilded Lotus at this point, but it only costs one mana to play, and essentially if you have a way to power this out and power the ability out a few times or proliferate, then you all of a sudden have a very efficient mana rock, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think, again, great with the Kiora's Follower and the Vizier of the Tumbling Winds.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff where you can just be like, put three brick counters
on it.
Vizier
of the Tumbling Sands. Come on, we're in the desert, Josh.
They have wind in the desert?
You know what? I'm done with you. Right. You don't like any of these tribal cards.
I'm going to get so much.
You don't appreciate
for not
the weather.
Tribal.
I mean,
tribal's fine. I just don't personally find it. All right. Throne of the God Pharaoh is the last artifact we're going to talk about. It's a two drop artifact, legendary artifact, in fact. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses life equal to the number of tapped creatures you control.
This pairs well with the green spell, Harvest Season.
This pairs well with every single vehicle.
And every deck that wants to tap out.
If you have a single vehicle, then you can tap all your creatures for, you know, basically no effect and just do this. Any token deck, you know, gosh, it's really good.
By the way, let's say you have Kiki, Jiki, and Zealous Conscripts, and you make an infinite tokens, and then Josh over here has a propaganda, and I'm like, you know what, I'll kill everyone else, and I'll play Throne of the God Pharaoh, you lose a million life.
Yeah, that seems... that seems good. You don't even need to attack and kill everyone else. You can just kill them with the tap creature there.
Yeah, exactly. You can just attack one person and then be like, what are you doing? You play Throne of the God Pharaoh. It's like, I win! Yeah, so interesting card. I like this one a lot, obviously. It's a bit build around me, but I think it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I don't think it goes in every deck, but the decks it goes in, it's really good.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some lands, finally. This first one has Josh Lee Kwai written all over it.
It's Cascading Cataracts. It's a land. It's an indestructible land.
Important.
You can tap it and add colorless or diamond mana to your mana pool, or you can pay five and tap it and add five mana in any combination of colors to your mana pool.
Yeah, it's a filter land for five color.
You know, funny, a lot of people pointed this out to me. This is not my favorite type of land. You do lose a color in the transaction.
That's true.
Or you do lose a mana in the transaction, right? Because you have to tap the Cascading Cataracts plus five mana.
Land, yeah.
Yeah. It is indestructible land, though, and that is occasionally important. Mm-hmm.
This would look amazing in foil, just saying.
Yeah. I still think it's decent in some five-color decks, but it's not amazing.
Yeah. I would 100% play this in Cent Triplets, though. Great card for this.
Yeah.
And finally, we should talk about all of the new cycling lands.
The bicycle lands.
Yeah, so the cool thing about these lands is that, like the lands I believe we got in Shadows Over Innistrad, they have land types on them.
Battle for Zendikar.
Battle for Zendikar.
Those are the Havelands.
The Havelands, right. Correct. Canyon Sloth is a swamp mountain, and it enters the battlefield tapped, but it's a swamp mountain, so you can search for it, and it adds black or red to your mana pool. You can also pay two mana to cycle it and discard the card and draw a card. So it's pretty powerful.
These cards are great.
Yeah, these are just must-fits in so many different commander decks because you can cycle it if you draw it, or you can play it early as a tap land, or you can fetch for it and fix your mana as well. So lots of flexibility here. That's three different very important things that you want in a commander deck.
Yeah, I would say the ability to fetch a dual land is among the
huge.
Top ability because that means... you know, in your four-color decks, if you get any fetch land, you can go find any color with it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Super powerful. And the cycling is actually very good because at times in the game where you have 13 or 14 lands, you just don't need another land. You draw it, you turn it into another card rather than the land. So, yeah. I really like these a lot. I think these are hopefully not going to be super expensive
after they
rotate.
The Havelands didn't go up that much either, so they're easy
to
get.
True.
All right, we're going to do a little test, Josh.
Okay.
Based on the names alone, let's see if you can guess the colors of the land. So we're going to start with an easy one. Irrigated Farmland.
That's blue-green.
Ding, 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 ding.
No, blue-white.
Blue-white, yeah.
Wait, how's it a farm? Sorry, I already lost. Fetid Pools is black. Blue. Wait, Yeah, black blue.
Black blue, yeah. Okay. It's fetid in a pool. Yeah. Scattered groves. That probably has green in it.
That's green white.
Correct. And then sheltered thicket.
It's got to be green red. Yep. That's the only one left.
Ding, ding, ding. You got 3 out of 4.
Oh, yeah, true. I was like, there's 5, but we already knew Canyon Sloth.
Canyon Sloth. All right, so that is it for our set review. Let's do a quick wrap-up of what we thought were the best of in certain categories. So let's just start off with the best god. Which god do you think is the best?
Bantu.
I think I would agree with Bantu.
Go ahead.
I would not be surprised if Kefnet, the blue one, got a little better, or Ronus, people found was played more than Bantu. But I think Bantu by far is the best.
I think Kefnet at its most synergistic is probably a little better than the other two. Bantu's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
I think Bantu is just the most useful generally.
Yeah. We're in agreement there. All right. The best of each color.
Oh, okay.
So if you need a little refresher, we can go through these. But the white one, I think, is pretty obviously going to be Anointed Procession for me. It's just a token doubler. It's a card that, or even Mind Sensor. You know, that card's also very good, but it's just a card that White's never had before.
Yeah, I think that's why, what puts it above for me, it's just an ability White doesn't have on its own right now that needs green for. And it's even better if you pair it with green. Blue is the most obvious, as foretold. Are we going to do best overall?
Yeah.
Okay.
As foretold might make it.
It's 100% the best overall card in the set for Commander.
Yeah.
I don't think it's close.
In green, I think it's not even close. It's got to be Harvest Season. This card is just, it can just ramp you so much. It's really easy to build around. And it's even just in a deck that doesn't have that many tap synergies, I think you're going to be able to put it out there and do a lot of damage with it.
Yeah, I agree.
Not damage. Put it all
I agree. Out. Although there are certain decks that can't run it because they don't have tons of creatures or whatever.
In that case, is it
Vizier the Menagerie, it might be, or it's the Ronus, Champion of Ronus.
Oh, to get to.
No, all of these are pretty specific to certain decks. I don't see a card that's like, wow, just play that in all. Like, Out Foretold is like, oh, geez, every blue deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on to black. This one's a bit tougher. I didn't really know which one of these I like the most, but I think I'm just going to go with Shadow of the Grave. So it's the instant that returns to your hand all the cards you cycled or discarded this turn.
This is interesting.
You can't choose Liliana because we have Best Planeswalker coming up.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's obviously Liliana.
Boy, Archfiend of Ifnir, that's pretty specific. Bantu, we already have Best God. Cruel Reality, I don't think is... I think Cruel Reality, I guess. It's not that good. It's just, I just think it goes in... You can play it in every deck with black because it's going to do something.
It's true. And someone might have an argument for one of the zombie lords as well.
Oh, yeah, true.
So.
Oh, maybe Nest of Scarabs.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
No, that's a very specific
deck. It's very specific, yeah.
That's a card that makes a little 1/1s for every -1 counter you put on creatures.
Very good with Hapatra, obviously. Yeah. Multicolored. What do you think is the best multicolored card? And it can't be Planeswalker because we all know it's Nissa otherwise.
Okay.
It could be one of the legendary creatures we talked about, though.
I mean, I'm partial to Hapatra, but Samut is very good, too.
Samut, Voice of Descent, has to be the best bang for your buck, or Temet. I think Temet has a lot of value as well for
I think
that
Hapatra
kind of
is
deck.
A little better than Temet in general, although both those decks are cool. Is there any of the Aftermath cards that are good enough?
Not particularly. No. I only chose a couple of them to talk about, and I wasn't too impressed by any of them.
I think it's Samut.
Yeah, I think it's Samut as well. All right, now let's talk about the best of Planeswalkers, Nissa, Steward of Elements, easily.
Easy.
Easy. X in its mana cost. Next up, definitely Liliana, and in a far third is Gideon of the Trials.
I'm not high on Gideon.
No.
I think Nissa is really good, though.
Yeah. All right, best overall card of the set?
As foretold.
I'm gonna go with Nissa.
Really?
Yeah. I've just never seen a Planeswalker have this many awesome abilities that are all relevant and all very powerful.
Well, if we're picking favorite, it's not As Foretold. I just think it's the best.
Yeah, maybe because it's one color and fits in every deck.
It's ridiculous. As Foretold is a ridiculous card.
I mean, clearly the correct answer is Hazoret the Fervent, the red god. It's indestructible. I don't know if you read
all
that part.
All hail red.
Yeah. All right, to the listeners, what cards are you most excited about from Amonkhet, and for which of your decks? Please tell us your thoughts on the new mechanics as well, whether or not you think Exert is all about the best thing you've ever seen, or if it's just whatever.
Exert is just whatever. Embalm!
Josh, we don't need your tribal talk over here. Embalm is pretty sweet, though. I love it.
All right. Make sure to go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, and you'll be supporting this podcast. Alternatively, you can go /game nights and support game nights, whichever one you feel like. They're all great for us. Card Kingdom is just great in general. That's where you want to go to order all your Amonkhet singles and your sealed product. They're the fastest shipping in the business. We hear this all the time. No matter where you order from, people are just like, Holy cow.
Super stoked, yeah.
We got our stuff so fast.
Yeah, and another thing that we wanted to mention is that we released an app recently called Lifelinker, and this is a life total app. You can support up to 6 players, any life total you want. It's on Android and Apple App Stores, coming soon to Windows Store as well. We're always trying to update and keep it up to date for the viewers and the fans. It's a very simple life app, and you can also unlock really cool backgrounds from your favorite creators. Right now we have the Professor and the Manosaurus, and they'll be giving away the codes to do that on sort of either their Patreons or on Twitter and stuff. So it's a great thing to do. Lifelinker, one word, go to the App Store and download it. And if you're a patron of the show, you get the full unlock of the entire program for free because you've already donated to the show, and we don't want you to have to double up on unlocking the app as well.
We get a lot of people asking, like, how do we unlock this logo or that logo? Each content creator's logo is unlockable by them in whatever way they see fit. Now, some of those have chosen to make theirs just public and put it out there. And when we see that, we will announce those on our Twitter. So you want to follow us on at CommandCast. But really, your best way is to just contact each content creator, and they'll tell you, like, this is how you get my code to unlock my logo. And you don't need to pay any money to unlock the logo.
Yeah.
So the app is totally free and usable. It's just a couple side features that cost a 99-cent one-time unlock.
And
all right,
that's going to take us to the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic, and it's going to tie into Lifelinker, because this week we're doing a giveaway.
Wow, surprise giveaway.
Surprise giveaway, yeah. We haven't had one of these in a while. I got some unlock codes for a game called Nier Automata. It's a game that is on PS4 and PC, and it's by Square Enix. It's like a Japanese RPG. It's gotten very high ratings,
looks
and
sweet.
It's really sweet. The combat system's super in-depth, but I have one PC code and one PS4 code that unlocks the entire game to give away, and the way that we're going to choose the winner is if you go to the App Store in Android or iPhone and you leave a comment and rating on Lifelinker, you will be entered.
5 stars.
Yeah, we want 5 stars. Obviously, you can have things that you want us to add to it, like commander damage and poison, but give us 5 stars. And then you can write all that other stuff, because we're reading all those as well and always integrating it into the updates. So if you want a free code to win Nier Automata, it's a 9 out of 10 on Steam. It's a highly rated game. It's one of the most hyped games of the year outside of Zelda. I have one PC code and one PS4 code, and it's going to be given away at random to someone that goes and unlocks it by downloading Lifelinker and leaving a rating on the appropriate app store.
Sweet. Can I win? I'm just kidding. I won't enter everybody. That would be weird. It'd be weird if you were like announced it, like, and the winner is Josh Lee Kwai.
And he gave us a 1-star review.
It would see, no, what?
How dare he? He said something about tribal in here, too. Man, he's just going off. You can win, Josh. You're always a winner.
All right. Make sure you check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic. You can find them on Twitter at The MMCast. Jimmy, you just did a full block Modern Masters draft with them, right?
Yeah, I did every set we drafted, Modern Masters 13, 15, and 17. It was a lot of fun. My deck was super bad, but it was great. Kessler opened like a foil Scalding Tarn and a foil Sword of Fire and Ice. He got hooked up. And a Tarmogoyf, you know, he got hooked up.
Well, I'm glad that he got hooked up.
For sure.
Yeah, you can find them also on collected.company, which is our magic hub, and you can find them right next to us.
Yep. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. You can find the video versions of this podcast. You want to watch the set review there at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast, as well as our game nights content and our gameplay videos. And big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations that lead and end the show on our podcast. You can find him on Twitter at livingcardsmtg. And don't forget, Kickstarter right now. Get our playmat. It is only going to be there for 1 month. You're going to want to get this because there's going to be no other time to purchase it after this. It's going to be limited edition, exclusive art, and there's a lot of also options and add-ons you can do if you go to the Kickstarter. Again, every link you're going to need is always going to be in the more info box below or the show notes, and it doubles as an excellent hat. It's like
you look like Laura Ingalls Wilder from Little House on the Prairie.
I thought it was going to be like a vizier of the vizier of playmats.
Vizier of Playmatamun.
Playmatamun. Nice. I dig it.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
I look great. I look like Pyramid Head now.
We should have made hats.
next piece of merch. We'll get there.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.